Today's sermon is actually entitled, Who's Your Mama? Can I hear you say, Who's Your Mama? And I gotta say, this is all Finney's insights, and it impacted me so greatly. And I have the honor of really preaching a message that he imparted to me this past week. And he's the one that said, use this title, Who's Your Mama? Hagar or Sarah. Now, as we look into the text, you'll see why, because it's actually a really difficult passage when you look at it. And in fact, it kind of causes us to wonder, like, what in the world is Paul talking about here? You see, because the main reason why Paul was writing the letter, because the letter of Galatians was actually written shortly after the resurrection of Jesus, and Christianity is this small minority sect that's growing and booming in the ancient world because Jesus resurrected, which was a historical fact. And all of a sudden, as people begin to teach this good news of this resurrected, physically resurrected Lord and King Jesus, Paul wants to begin to be telling people, hey, this is what the heart of this good news is about. It's a story of Jesus. Now, the rest of the world, the way that they understood religion and the way to relate to God was this. And many of us, when we think of religion, we think of it this way. I do good things, and therefore God loves me. So in other words, in the ancient world, there was this belief that I do good things, I sacrifice, I'm a good person, I do a lot of great things, I have this kind of job, I'm a healthy person. And because of all these things, these are evidences for why God should love me. Modern people don't struggle with that at all, right? Only ancient people struggle with that sort of thing. So in other words, what Paul was speaking up against then was this old way of believing God and religion, which was, I do good things. It's based on my name or my title or what family I come from or how good looking I am. Maybe not that, but all these things that we think that God somehow approves of us and we're in a good relationship with him based on the things that I do or that my performance and my works, the way that I earn my way so that God will be pleased with me. And now here Paul is writing this letter and he's actually saying, no. There's a brand new thing in town. The story of a resurrected Jesus who actually tells us that it's not about earning your way to God. It's about a God who would sacrificially give his son for us because he loves us. And because he loves us, therefore we do good things. Now, it's an entirely different way of looking at things. Because now, all of a sudden, it's no longer about how we earn it, but rather, it's about what God has done and how we can trust that. And the heart of the book of Galatians is about that. Now, today's text is really interesting, though, because Paul has been talking in these different metaphors. He's been talking about how you're now a child, you're now a son or a daughter. You're someone who was once in bondage, but now you're free. So he's talking in all these allegories. And today's text, we're also going to look at another allegory that Paul writes about. Now, check it out. It's actually going to be a story from the Old Testament, which was written thousands of years in advance. Now, here we go. We're going to look at it. Galatians chapter 4, verses 21 to 31. This is what Paul is writing to the churches in Galatia. And he's been constantly pounding this message. The message of Christianity is this entirely new thing. It's about grace. It's about forgiveness. It's about what God has done, not about what you've done. Tell me, you who want to be under the law, when he's talking about the law here, he's talking about when you want to be under this old form of religion, of trying to earn your way before God, are you not aware of what the law says? Now he's going to talk about this allegory. Go to the next slide. For it is written that Abraham was a patriarch in the Old Testament, the founder of Judaism, and really the founder of the Christian faith as well, because it goes way, way back when God chose Abraham. Abraham had two sons. Can I hear you say two sons? This is a very important fact here. One by the slave woman and the other by the free woman. Now, we'll get into this story in a little bit. Go to the next slide. His son by the slave woman was born according to the flesh. Now, by flesh, he's talking about this old way of religion. But his son by the free woman was born as a result of a divine promise. Next slide. These things are being taken figuratively. Now, what Paul is basically saying is, as I share this story about Abraham, I want you to know, don't take these things literally. It's really just an allegory. I want you to understand. So before you start saying, well, how could God say that this person was free and this person was a slave and all? He's just talking. Paul is talking just in figurative language. The women represent two covenants. One covenant is from Mount Sinai and bears children who are to be slaves. This is Hagar. Now, see, because Abraham had a son through a slave woman named Hagar. Go to the next slide. Now, Hagar stands for Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present city of Jerusalem because she is in slavery with her children. Now, Hagar had a child named Ishmael. Can I hear you say Ishmael? Ishmael was born of a slave woman that basically Abraham and Hagar got it on and they had Ishmael, right? Go to the next slide. But the Jerusalem that is above is free and she is our mother. Okay, what's he talking about? Go to the next slide. For it is written, be glad, barren woman, you who never bore a child, shout for joy and cry aloud. You who are never born or never in labor, because more are the children of the desolate woman than of her who has a husband. That's kind of interesting. Go to the next slide. Now you, brothers and sisters, like Isaac, are children of promise. You see what Paul is talking about here. Remember, he's talking about two different women. He's talking about Sarah, and he's talking about Hagar. We've already talked about who Hagar was. Hagar was a slave woman, and Abraham got it on with Hagar and had Ishmael. And now what Paul is actually saying, but I want you to know that there's this person named Sarah, and Sarah is the one who the child of promise was born through, named Isaac. And we are all children of promise. At that time, the son born according to the flesh persecuted the son born by the power of the Spirit. It is the same now because there was a sibling rivalry that was happening. Of course there was. Go to the next slide. But what does Scripture say? Get rid of the slave woman and her son, for the slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with the free woman's son. Now, what is he talking about? He's talking about the promise that's held in both the slave woman's son as well as the free woman's son. Go to the next slide. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we are not children of the slave woman of Hagar and Ishmael, but of the free woman, Sarah and Isaac. All right, now here's some context. For those of you guys who maybe have never heard about the story of Abraham, Abraham was one of the patriarchs of the Jewish faith as well as the Christian faith. Abraham, at an old age, he was maybe about 80 or so, and Sarah, his wife, who was barren, was about 70 years old. Okay, so can you imagine this? 80 and 70 years old. Now, at this moment, God gives a promise to Abraham, and he basically says this, I have a promise. I'm going to choose you, and I've chosen you to be a blessing to the entire world, to the entire cosmos, and your children will become a blessing, and your children will be as numerous as the stars. Okay, so he's 80 years old, though, right? And so he's 80 years old, and God makes this promise that as many stars as there are in the sky, and I know in New York City, there are these things actually in the sky that are called stars. I know it's hard for us to see in the kind of the bright city lights and stuff, but if you can imagine in this nomadic culture, and Abraham was like this shepherd, I mean, he looks up at the stars, and he's like, if you didn't know God, my wife, she's 70, and we've been trying for a long time. And still, she was barren, no children. Now, what we find out later is that 20 years later, okay, after receiving this promise, about 20 years later, Abraham's 100 and Sarah's 90, and they gave birth to Isaac. And Isaac was the child of promise. Aha, but you see, Abraham receives this vision, right? Your descendants will be as numerous as the stars. But what did Abraham do, right? He's kind of like, well, can you imagine? And he's like, okay, it's going to happen then. And then 1 month goes by. You're like, okay, it's still not happening. 2 months goes by. 3 months goes by. A year goes by. He's 71 now, right? Sarah's 71. Sarah's 72. Sarah's 73, 74. I mean, can you imagine waiting year after year? He's probably, you know, he's getting older too. He's like, I might die soon. I don't know if God's going to come through here. I don't, is this, maybe I, something's not working, right? And so he's basically, I mean, can you imagine? He's starting to fret about this. You see, what happens in the story of Abraham is that he ends up, along with Sarah, they end up saying, you know what? Maybe God, he gave this promise, but he didn't really know what he was talking about. So, hey, there's that girl over there, Hagar, she's a slave, she's young, she's fertile. What do you think we just kind of like jump into God's plans and maybe this is what we're supposed to do? We're supposed to me get with Hagar and we'll have a child. And so that's what ends up happening. Abraham and Sarah collude to actually go to Hagar, who's the slave woman, and to have a child named Ishmael. Now, what ends up happening is God ends up telling them, no, you did not trust in my provision and my promise. You took matters into your own hands. And as a result, God said, hey, I want you to still trust me. There is a promise that's coming through your wife, Sarah, a free woman. Now, here's what Paul is doing. As he's writing about this story, this is what he's saying. He's been talking about the gospel, right? How it's not about us and what we do and our performance. Although those are part of the Christian life, that's not central to what it means to please God, is it? So what he's doing is he brings this allegory, this story, and he basically says this. How many of us, when we believe, the things that we believe about God is, you know what, God, you kind of don't know what you're doing, so I'm going to take things into my own hands, and I'm going to get with Hagar. Yeah, I'm going to get with Hagar. Meanwhile, God is saying, no, what, you're not trusting in my promises and my provision. You see, the gospel is basically this. The gospel is that it's all about God and what he's done, and I can trust him because he's a good and powerful God. But whenever I take things into my own hands, whenever I try to do things on my own to make sure that I'm my own God, I'm the one who's in control, I am the master of my own destiny, the master of my fate, what ends up happening is I take things into my own hand and I'm chasing after Hagar. And the question that Paul is asking is, who's your mama? Can I hear you say, who's your mama? Are you trusting in the promises and the provision of God? Or are you trying to take things into your own hand and trying to move and do things on your own, by your own strength, because you're just not patient enough for what God has for you? Or you just don't believe he's got what's right for you? When Finney shared this insight with me this past week, I was absolutely floored. Because if any of you guys know me, I am a super impatient person. I'm constantly like, I'll leave a meeting and I'll be like, okay, this is the to-do list. And Christian knows this about me, right? They'll be like, this is the to-do list. We got to send out like 15 emails. And like while he's saying this is the to-do list, I'm typing it right in his face, getting ready to send it out. I mean, I am impatient. I just want things to be done. I mean, you know, the iPhone, you know, like whenever there's like these little notifications, those notifications bug me to no end. So I constantly have to clear them. Meanwhile, one of my pet peeves that I'm not sure how to get over is like my wife in her email inbox is like 2,456. Have you guys seen those? Like, why do you do that, guys? I mean, it's like, I am super impatient. I want to take things in, because this is what I believe. The harder I work, I'm going to reap what I sow and all this and that. And those are Christian principles, in fact, that I'm supposed to be responsible for things. But we know that there's this fine line between when I've taken things into my own hand, when my mama has become Hagar, and when I'm actually trusting in the promises and the provision of God. Before we started this church, and some of you guys know this story, and I share this actually at Intro to Hope at different times when I've shared at Intro to Hope. When we first started this church, part of my journey was I was part of a church, a fairly large church, and part of the opportunity in front of me was to become part of the next senior leadership at this church. And I had worked for 10 years for this. I mean, it was something that was like the pinnacle. Now, I know it might sound weird because you're like, I can't believe a pastor's talking about this, but as a pastor, it felt like my career advancement. Like I had invested 10 years into something, to getting this promotion, you know, and I was holding on to it. And then I remember, though, as my wife and I were wrestling through the decisions of what to do, as we were wrestling with it, we were praying, and I remember God said, no, this is not for you. I was like, whatever. And so I stayed in it, you know what I'm saying? I stayed with it because Hagar's looking pretty good. And then I remember someone asked me this question, why do you want to be in this position to go in senior leadership? And I was like, you know, I really like that feeling of when people say, oh, Drew's the senior pastor. Hagar looks really good, right? And then I realized prestige is one reason. And then as I was searching my heart even more, the second reason why I realized I was chasing this and pursuing this was because New York City, if you haven't heard, is fairly expensive. And I had a job. And my wife and I, we were praying at that point whether or not we would have kids and God would bless us with kids. And so I was like, you know what? Another reason why is because I want a raise. I want some money. And I thought, these are awful reasons to be a pastor, right? I mean, come on, like prestige and financial security. These are awful reasons. And so I remember my wife and I, we just said, we're going to trust God with this decision. And so I ended up resigning my position. I mean, and you can imagine this feeling of like, I worked 10 years for this moment. And I resigned my position. And then, man, God met me in a powerful way because I got depressed. I mean, I was so depressed. I was like, God, why did you have me do this? And what ended up happening is the church that I left ended up growing and flourishing. And I was like, man, I wanted them to suffer without me, you know, and like all this stuff. And I'm just, I can be human. And I remember as we left, then the summer hits and my wife and I went away and we were staying at her grandma's place. And then my wife got pregnant. It was at her grandma's place, but that was another story. But anyhow, you can come up with whatever you want. My wife got pregnant, and I didn't have a job. So, of course, I'm like, God, you're the one that told me to leave. I know that you're the one that has this promise or provision for me. And I remember praying and thinking, God's got this thing for me. And then what ended up happening is I was wrestling through, I realized like God had put on my heart to start churches that start other churches, smaller churches and stuff. But I needed a job and I was way too scared to start anything. And so a big mega church from California ended up calling and saying, hey, we want you to be the next guy. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, God did have a plan. He had this amazing plan to take me away from this one church to go to another big mega church to increase my influence, prestige, and financial security. And so I went, I had this final interview, I was rocking the interview, did a great job, and then I remember at the final meeting, after the final meeting, I called home and I called Tina. I told her how the interview went. And there was a couple of funny moments where I told them, hey, I really believe that my destiny is to plant churches in Southern Dallas. And they were like, well, why are you here? And I'm like, oh, don't worry. I'm going to accept this job if you give it to me. You know, and it was kind of like this moment where, and Tina basically said, hey, I had a dream. I had a dream that they said no to you. Whatever. Hagar looks pretty good. Hagar looks pretty good. And I remember I got back home and I started emailing everyone, hey, we're moving to California. This is going to be great. I'm going to have a job. I mean, and it was through that I remember writing in my journal, and that's kind of the seed verse for our church was Psalm 33:18, where it says, a king is not saved by the size of his army. A war horse is a vain hope for deliverance. But the eyes of the Lord are on those who fear him, on those whose hope is in his unfailing love. And we're thinking, oh man, Hagar's looking real good. But God, I realize you have something else for me. And in that moment, I realized I was chasing the same things that God had been calling me to leave. Financial security and prestige. I was chasing those things instead of trusting in God's promise and provision. Have you ever been there before? You're a single person, right? And man, you know, you're just praying that God's going to provide someone for you. That right when you walk down into the lobby, you're going to meet Mr. Right or Mrs. Right. Or maybe that's not what you dream, but anyhow. But there's this other person who, in your mind, you know that God is saying, hey, it's not only God, but it's all your other friends. And they're like, hey, stop it. And you're like, no, Hagar looks pretty good. Or the way we use our bodies as single people in relationships that we're in, there's every temptation to give away our bodies before it's followed through with a commitment. And we're like, oh, God, I know what you're saying, but man, Hagar looks pretty good. And God's like, who's your mama? Is it Sarah or is it Hagar? If you're someone, when it comes to your finances, you know the ways that God has called you to use your finances or called you to steward what you've been given. And the ways that you use your money, though, it's not shaped by this longing to trust God in his provision, in his power, but instead it's used in ways because Hagar looks pretty dang good. See, this happens all the time, right? Where we begin to take matters into our own hands when it comes to our careers, when it comes to our futures, when it comes to our kids. And what we end up doing is try to take things into our own hands. Meanwhile, God's like, hey, who's your mama? Will you trust in God's providence and his provision, what he's called you to do? Or will you trust in taking things into your own hands and birthing things just because you're impatient? And meanwhile, God's got these promises for us. Now, here's the thing, though, right? You're probably like, you're right, Drew. I've been taking this medicine, and I realize that's Hagar for me, and I just need to let go and trust in God. I'm not saying that, right? If your car's having trouble, and you're right, Drew. I'm not going to trust in getting an oil change. I'm just going to trust that God's going to miraculously change my car. Don't do that, because that's not what he's saying, right? That's not what he's saying. Because there's that fine line between, we know it in our hearts, when we're pursuing this career, not out of trusting in the provision and the providence of God, but rather trusting in our own abilities and strength, and we're just chasing after Hagar. How many of us in this room, and I struggle with it all the time, because like I said, I'm an impatient person. I'm constantly chasing after Hagar. Now, why in the world do we do this? Well, it's because of what we believe about God. Either he's not powerful enough or he's not good. But here's the thing. Last week, we talked about the resurrection of Jesus. Jesus rose from the dead. And the Apostle Paul, when he speaks about it, he says, I pray that this power that rose Jesus from the dead, that you may know that it's in you. This power to raise the dead. Meanwhile, here we are, penny pinching, chasing after Hagar. Well, I kind of need to cut corners so I can get this $150. And here is the promise and the provision of God that says, I have raised Jesus from the dead. And you're here, penny pinching, chasing after Hagar. Or it's not that we believe in his impotence, but we believe in the fact that he's not good. Some of us, and I tell you what, I mean, my views of God totally are colored by this whole transactional, man, God hates me unless I do good things type of view. Because that's the culture that I grew up in. If I mess up, then my father hates me. And I better fix things so that he'll love me again. Some of us, we have this view of God. And so we don't want to trust that. We trust back into like, oh, I'm going to take things into my own hand and earn things on my own. And meanwhile, here's a loving father who says, I've given my life for you. How will I withhold any kind of goodness for you? How do I not know what's best for you? How many of you can attest to moments in your life where you realize you wanted something, and now looking back, if you had gotten that, it would have ruined you. How many of you have been there before? Yeah. And it's because God, he knows what you want and what you need if you only saw everything that he sees. Question this morning, who's your mama? Is it Sarah, trusting in the promise and provision of God? Or is it Hagar, where you're chasing after things that aren't of God? Now, I want to put up a verse just to close our service together. Because here's the opportunity that Paul is saying. He's saying, God loves you. He's got perfect provision and power, everything. He's got everything for you. And you have this opportunity to be a free person. You don't have to be a slave to all this worry and anxiety. You don't have to be a slave to all of these different passions that lead you into decisions that you'll regret later. You can actually be free because you can trust in the power and provision of a God who loves you and who resurrects the dead. Now, there's a verse that, did we get this verse? Proverbs 3, 5 through 6. There's a verse that my son and I, we recite every night together. And it's because this is so hard for me, guys. That's why every single night I recite it for myself and I recite it for him, because I hope that this is the verse that really guides his life for the rest of his days. And it's basically this. Can we read it together? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him and he will make your paths straight. Can we put that on one slide, Kevin? Here's what I want to do. I'm just going to invite the worship team to come forward, and I'm just going to I just want us to, you could just stare at the verse in silence over the next minute or so. To trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. What are those areas in which you're chasing after Hagar? And you're like, God, no, I want to trust you. I want to trust the one who can raise the dead. Maybe you're someone who's battling depression or addiction, and you keep turning to these things time and again. Maybe you're someone who the worries of you as parents over your kids is just crippling you. Maybe it's the worries of your career. Maybe you're compromising in the way that you conduct yourself in relationships or the way that you conduct yourself at work. And you realize you're doing it because you're chasing after Hagar. And today's the day. Paul says, hey, we're a free people. And free people trust in the power and the provision of God. Mm-hmm. Will you trust? Will you trust me? So we'll just stare at the verse for another moment or so. And then I'm going to invite us to sing together. Father, in light of the resurrection power that lives within us, we want to be a free people. We want to be a people who trust in your power and your provision. There's so many temptations I know in my own life to chase after Hagar, to do things that are not of your will. And God, I just pray that you would rip me from that path. Allow me to trust you with everything and to submit to you.